introducing them. Stephanie Toronto, I think this is your first time officially as our new board member.
Yes.
Kelly Furman. I think this is your first time officially as our new board member. Kelly, are you on? Kelly is not.
And I did text Ms. Broadnax yesterday to make sure she had the info, and she told me yes. So she's not on yet. Don't see her.
All right. So we might have a few latecomers, it sounds, today, but we should get started in any case. So I think everyone has seen our minutes that were sent out earlier today. And I am asking if we can bring the meeting to order and start by any public comments that we may have on anyone who has joined the meeting. Okay, with no comments, I'd like to ask for a motion to approve the prior minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve. It's Kathy.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it.
Thank you very much, Erica. Could I ask all those approving, say aye, please?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, so Linda, let's go to you and get a quick update.
Okay, so first, I guess, and most important to everybody, Leah and I have been meeting a couple times a week. These are the areas that we are, haven't started to focus on yet, but this is kind of our overall goals. Around student recruitment, admin structure, instructional staffing, year-end planning will be next. FY21 planning is underway. We'll get to that in a second. The charter modification is pending. I'll talk a little bit about more of that. We need to make some decisions around the fellows. And then the next two, a little bit later, I'll be working on most of those, just getting ready to transition and help Leland out with that. So the way we've sort of set it up is that I would continue predominantly through the month of April, trying to include Leland in decisions around the current year, right? So, things like policies that are go well, long distance learning, all of that, will stay with me. May will start to make that a little bit more balanced with me making sure that either Leland is able to make the decision or that we're doing that jointly. And then in June, Leland would be taking the lead with as much assistance or guidance or input that he wants from me. And then with regard to things for next year, for example, hiring, Leland is taking the lead and I am providing, frameworks for how I would have gone about that, how others go about that, maybe some regulations or restrictions and input based on my experience so far. But Leland is making sure that it's a direction that he wants to go for next year. Any questions about that? So we were hoping to talk a little bit about the calendar and the org chart, and we just, the calendar still needs to get through the leadership team with some input, and Leland's still teaching and I'm still working, so we didn't get quite as far. There's a draft calendar out there. I don't know, Leland may change it up before takes it to the leadership team. And then the org chart, we still need to work with Jeff to figure out what positions that finally we can put in. The other input around that final org chart will be the master schedules, trying to figure out what teaching positions, because those have to be filled first with the dollars. And so in the charter way, you make sure the kids have teachers, and then you build around that to see what administrative and support positions you can afford, and then decide who does what. But we do have a couple versions, two or three versions of an org chart that would work depending on where the financial projections go. In the next few days, we'll certainly get that nailed down with Jeff and move that forward. We have a modification outstanding around enrollment. I had a couple conversations with the Department of Education in the form of John Carwell a couple of weeks ago, I think. Time is really hard to measure these days. But I think it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, John called to let me know that the secretary had not ruled on our modification request around enrollment, but that she wanted to combine it with what he perceived to be a major modification that we talked about with the department around separating from the foundation. In that conversation, John and I agreed that since our plan is to stay with the foundation around the tutors, that it would be a minor modification, which helps us a lot from getting an answer. But the secretary still wanted to address those two things at the same time, the enrollment modification and the modification separate from the foundation. So the board has a draft of that modification. Again, that's a little bit, we're going to need the five-year projections for that. So it's a little bit hung on that issue, but really fast. This has some implication for recruiting. So right now our current authorized enrollment is 600. Right now we are at 74 point something percent of that 600. I think, you know, it feels like we can get to the May 1st count at that number. John seemed to feel okay about that. Technically, if we don't hit the May 1st count, the department could put a school on formal review or whatever that process is called now. I don't think they will, particularly considering we have the modification enrollment out there. So, and if we get the modification in soon enough, they will certainly understand more about that. So I think unless you have questions, it's all I did. And then I just really want to focus all three, Nikki, Atiyah, and Amanda are going to talk about distance learning and give you a real sense of what's going on around the kids and teaching. But I first want to say to the board and acknowledge the leadership of these three and also Caitlin and Kendra. They have really done an amazing task, one that I was worried about at the beginning, truly demonstrating inspiring leadership and teamwork and focus on the students and bringing the whole school along to turn this around from a brick and mortar school to a stand-up pop-up online school and dealing with a lot of interesting challenges around technology, just the Google platform and recording and policies that I've put in place that make their work a little bit harder. Learning a new learning platform for some teachers and keeping everybody calm through that process. Figuring out special education and keeping the school safe and compliant around that. Addressing students, with needs, those students who have just always needed a lot of adult support and figuring out how to continue to give that adult support now. And then transitioning students, some of those students who have been alternatively placed, some of them are coming back or due to come back, and that presents its own challenges. And then the teachers alike, and clearly everybody is at some level of anxiety around this, around, kids not being there, kids being there, now I have to teach, now I have to record, now I have to do this. But everybody has really done a great job and pitched in. And, if you're interested in stepping into some of the classes to see it, I think you would really enjoy that. So just let Atiya or Amanda know and they can help arrange that. In this, there's also been a new and I think great and to Great Oaks, speak a little bit on both sides of this fence, Great Oaks and the CEB, there's been a great collaboration. I think this experience, although it has a bunch of negatives, has actually helped the CEB and Great Oaks find those places where it's really great to collaborate and in and around the sense of helping teachers, helping administrators, helping parents, helping students. So I think that's been a real positive and one that could really carry forward going in future years. We published a distance learning handbook, which is on the website, mostly to make sure that parents understood like where the policies are different in the online environment, reminding them of the acceptable use policy, you know, what things kids should and shouldn't be doing with technology, a little bit different grading policy, pass fail, how that will look, and attendance, you know, what attendance means distance learning. And overall, it feels like we don't have great data yet because attendance has been one of the challenges, the big differences that Nikki and others are working through, but it feels like there's about overall 75% engagement, maybe 70. Amanda and Atiya can talk a little bit more specifically about that. Clearly, Chromebooks has been an issue. I mean, we have them, getting them to parents or getting parents to come get them. It has been part of it. There have been some language barriers. When the child is coming and taking on that role of communication, that's a little easier. Now that we're trying to work with the parent and not really engage the students in one-on-one conversations, that has presented itself. And then just, you know, finding parents and teaching everybody how to communicate in this online way. Really easy for a parent to stop by school, a little bit harder to get them comfortable just calling somebody or sending an email to somebody they're not used to working with. So despite that though, there are a lot of good things happening and there's learning going on every day to make it better and better. So thanks, team.
Can I ask a quick question, Linda? And I'm not sure, maybe Atiya or someone else may have the answer to this. How are we counting engagement? Is it that they are consistently getting on or a certain amount of hours are logged in?
When I say 75%, I'm really, that's a very low bar. It means the students have been on, the students have attended a class. So 25%, I'll say it the other way, about 25% aren't on at all.
And for those, is there an outreach? I mean, what can
Constant, okay. Constant. Yeah, from teachers, fellows, from deans. Yeah, there's been a lot of attempts and continuing. And it's one of the priorities is getting to the unreached students.
And is it also a device issue, perhaps, that they don't have the appropriate technology or connectivity, or is it mostly, not engaging?
It's for some, the kids that we haven't connected with or are not showing up, we're not sure, but there definitely are all of those. So plenty, we have a list of parents who don't have Wi-Fi. CEB is working with Comcast. We agreed to buy the contracts. Comcast has made some deals, but it still requires some contracts. So CEB has agreed to buy those contracts. We had a few hotspots. I think we're down to like 3 or 4 that we've already provided. So we're trying to get through that list. Certainly not having the Chromebook, I think was a barrier. Nikki can give numbers about how many we've distributed, how many more, but there's still a group of kids that we're not really sure why. And those are the priority. It's just to try to figure out why they're not showing up. And some, you know, life is happening. So, you know, Amanda was telling me about a child who's, I think it was Amanda, about, the parent's pregnant, or maybe it was Caitlin, right? And so if the mom had a baby, you know, right when this started, you know, she just may not, you know, maybe the kids are living with somebody else and we just don't know that yet. Just haven't found them yet. So there are, I think, a variety of barriers.
Thank you.
But we're still working on it, still focusing on it. Nikki.
All right, so I'll just give a brief overview of the operations side of distance learning. So we've given out 210 Chromebooks of our 350 in inventory at the school. We still have, I would guess, about 20 or so outstanding Chromebook requests to give out. Some parents are having issues being able to come and pick them up at the school, but we are working with those families to be able to drop them off. Luckily, some of our staff is able to do that. There's been a couple of tech challenges. For example, the issue of recording students during live sessions. So we've moved from that to a program called Screencast-O-Matic, which allows us to essentially crop out the students. So we just got that up and running. And we finalized a distance learning handbook so that parents, staff, everyone's on the same page about expectations, policies, all the things that have popped up that we never could have imagined would be issues that are issues. So that's done and that's out and circulated. Myself and my team, we continue to just troubleshoot.
Nikki, the recording of the students, was that a privacy issue that people were concerned about?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Protection issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're just continuing to troubleshoot things as small as I forgot my password, so I can't get my home internet to work. We're talking to those parents every day about fixing those things so that students are able to learn. I also want to talk a little bit about CEB support throughout this whole process. So the CEB has fundraised for 50 Chromebooks for us, which is great because our supply is running very low. So those came in today, and we're working to configure them and be able to hand them out by Wednesday. The CEB, as Linda mentioned, is also providing 6 months of free Wi-Fi through Comcast for those parents who have expressed hardship. And that's about 30 parents. I just got a new one today, so we're still learning. Some of those students who haven't been on, we're still learning that there are those types of barriers. And then just the ongoing Family Resource Center and the meal program that continues to run. That's been great for our families. I know they've been utilizing it a lot. Jim, are you asking?
Okay. Yeah, how well attended is the meal program? Are you having a lot of kids coming every day?
They serve about, I would say, an average of 1,500 meals. We don't do it every day, but they're a week. So we serve them Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And parents can pick them up. Like if they come on Monday, they can pick them up for Monday and Tuesday. If they come on Wednesday, they can pick up for Wednesday and Thursday, right? Just to eliminate the times that they need to come out. And if they come on Friday, they pick them up for the weekend. They can get breakfast and lunch. The USDA just authorized snacks, so we will be able to give them breakfast, lunch, and snacks. And there are about 30 families that, 57 families a week-ish that are coming to the food pantry to pick up food boxes.
Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive. Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, we'll do it as long as we can until someone gets sick.
Okay, so next I just want to talk about recruitment and enrollment. I have Patrick Ryan on the phone. Who is going to deep dive into some of the recruitment efforts. But if everyone's able to see my screen.
Yes.
Okay, this is just a chart of our enrollment as it stands today. So that first column is where we are prior to the May 1st unit count. That's our numbers. And then that second column is what's going to be reported in the May 1st unit count. We have a total of 5 first-year agreements, 3 for 6th grade and 2 for 7th grade. And as you can see, that's been added into that second column. And our enrollment right now for the May 1st unit count will be 433. So that's all the students, minus the students who have already enrolled at other schools that we've had to remove from the system as of today.
So the 433 is not the net yet, or is it?
No, 43 is what it will be.
Okay.
Assuming no one else withdraws.
Okay. Right. It includes all prior withdrawals.
Yeah. Say that again.
It includes all prior withdrawals.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's why the number went from 454 to 433.
Okay.
Yeah, and as you can see, that eighth grade class, which I have in green, from 119 to 95, that's consistent with what usually happens with eighth graders going to high school.
Okay.
And if there's no questions about just this simpler version of the chart, I'll turn it over to Patrick Ryan.
Just one quick question, Nikki. Yes. So for example, the ninth graders that we have 70 now, 69 have agreed to come over for 10th grade?
At this point, only one student has signed up at another high school.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki, I think I read somewhere that there were some outstanding first-year agreements that haven't been signed but have been provided.
That's awesome. So that number is expected to go up. I think Patrick has a couple expected for tomorrow as well.
Just as an introduction for some of the newer people, Patrick was the original person that did all the recruiting of the students when the school opened up. So he was here for a year prior to when anybody else was here. And he has agreed to come on and help us over the next couple months to try to deal with our recruitment.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, good evening, everybody. So, you know, Nikki kind of laid out the numbers of where we're at right now and where we need to get to for next year. I think it's important to say that we're off to a great start, but that to be honest with everybody, the kind of student recruitment work just because of all the challenges that have come up this year is a couple months behind. Looking into next year, we're only taking in 6th and 7th graders. So we want to have a new 6th grade class of 92 students and then be able to replace any 7th grade students that leave. So you're looking at, you know, anywhere between, you know, 110 and 130 new students in the 6th and 7th grade likely. At this moment, to replace those 120-odd students, we have approximately 29 active applications for those two grades. And the updated first-year agreement numbers as of this morning is 7. So there's 7 commitments for those 100 or so spots between the 6th and 7th grade. And as Jeff mentioned, my role in this process is to support Nikki and Kevin and the student recruitment team with the implementation of the plan that we kind of came up with collectively. And there's 5 main areas that we're going to focus on over the coming months to do our best to close that gap and make sure we have a solid 6th grade and 7th grade class ready for the start of school in September. So the 5 areas, number 1, we're going to do a lot of meeting with local community leaders, governmental leaders, nonprofits, religious leaders, people that have stakes in the community that can help connect us to families and help to rebuild the Great Oaks name. We have several meetings scheduled so far. Next week, we're meeting with, Friday, we're meeting with Paul Herdman of Rodell, James Spadola of Read Aloud Delaware, Logan Herring of Reach Riverside. And then next week, we have meetings scheduled with Kevin Kelly. He's the City Director of Parks and Recreation, and Councilwoman Michelle Harley, who represents the 4th District, the district that the CEB is in. And we will continue to reach out to community leaders, parents, families, to meet with them and make sure they understand what the school's vision is, what Leland's vision is moving forward. That's an important first step in rebuilding the connection with the community. The next thing that we're, the next initiative that we need to focus on is just community outreach. So that's getting out into the community, going door to door once we're out of quarantine, and engaging with the families directly. I had a great meeting today with a canvassing contractor who does work like this for the state. And I was very impressed with the preliminary proposal that they've put together. And they'll be meeting with the team on Friday. But again, our vision for them is to help us engage the community during quarantine, because that's important. We can't wait until we're out of this to start engaging families in the community. But then once we get out of quarantine, being able to go door to door and really put boots on the ground, because that's what's going to change perception about the school and get people re-excited about Great Oaks. And the last three things I'll go through quickly. Number one, Kevin has been working very hard on our marketing campaign. Social media ads, postcard mailings, just several items to ensure that families are seeing the Great Oaks name and seeing that we're active from multiple different medias. So there's going to be a banner going up in the mall, a postcard going out very soon. And again, a really great presence on social media. I don't know if anyone follows the Great Oaks social media Instagram accounts, but I think they're doing a really excellent job of engaging the students. It's fun. And they're definitely keeping students connected. It's really cool to see the engagement that they have with the students on social media. And then the last two things really quickly, virtual open house events. So Kevin and I are running almost daily virtual open house events for new applicants. So tomorrow we actually have three virtual open house tours scheduled at, I think, 11, 12, and 1. It's kind of a packed day. And there's a few more of those throughout the week. So we hope to be able to convert most of those into first-year agreements. It's going to be somewhat of a challenge with the lack of a building. But but I will definitely make sure to answer all their questions, and hopefully we can get them on board. And then I'm going to turn it over to Jeff really quick just to talk about the re-enrollment efforts. But I just, you know, I want to mention that, you know, I don't think anyone can fully understand how the current situation is going to impact student recruitment. I mean, you could probably name 1,000 reasons why it might be have a negative impact, but I also think this could be a situation where it actually benefits student recruitment in a way. I'm not really sure, but one of the things that I've noticed right off the bat when making phone calls, people are answering every time because people are home. So our ability to engage with families is at a really heightened point. So I think there are a lot of benefits to the circumstances. So I think it's important to keep that in mind, that we don't know what's going to happen, but there are things working in our favor during this challenging time. So if there aren't any, well, I'll turn it over to Jeff, and if there are any questions.
Just, Patrick, thank you for this update. I had two quick questions. For social media, is there any other means other than Instagram that we're trying to reach out?
I'll let Nikki answer, yeah.
Yeah, we use Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Oh, excellent, excellent. And for, is there a way that we can also get a list of sixth grade students and families from the state or from any of the sources that you're trying to reach out to?
That's a really good question, Jim. That would be amazing if that would happen. That's not something that has happened in my experience in Delaware. We tried that when we opened up. In some states, that is that kind of the status quo. That's how they operate, but that's not something that they do here. But there are, you know, other ways to kind of zero in on that population, but definitely not getting any lists from the state.
Okay, so Kendall, are you aware of anything?
I'm sorry, Jim, can you ask the question again?
Yeah, sure. Is there any way that the school can obtain a list of families and students that are entering sixth grade?
Oh, yeah, no.
No.
Yeah, it's been asked.
No.
I mean, good asking, but no.
Yeah. It has to get asked every year. It has to get asked every year.
Yep. Thank you.
But Jim, I will say to your question really quickly, the next best way and from my experience to target you know, a certain age range of individuals is the door-to-door work. So it's a far second from a, you know, a printed list with addresses, but it's the next best way to kind of get that data and target those individuals.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Okay, the other aspect of this is we clearly need to have a campaign to maintain the students that we have. And right now, what we've been working on is what is being referred to as the counter narrative, or what it's starting to evolve into Mr. Kent's vision for the school, which definitely sounds a lot better than counter narrative. But what we're going to do is to work with some of the critical faculty and staff and organize a structure where they'll call and maintain relationships with the family during the summer so we can maintain as many of the right students that we need that are currently enrolled in our school.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. That's very important too, absolutely.
Nikki?
That concludes my report.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, let me stop.
I think it's up to you again, Jeff.
It's Amanda.
Okay.
Oh, shoot.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Amanda.
Okay, I'll share my screen as well. Okay, so here we go. So a lot of the things that have been mentioned have already been mentioned that are on this list. However, I'll start with the highlights of distance learning. I think first, I'm also really, really proud of our teachers. There's been a lot of change very, very quickly. And I will say every single teacher is trying something new and working outside their comfort zone and have maintained a really positive attitude overall. And I'm very, very grateful for the team that I have here. So they're utilizing new programs. Our driver's ed is up and running. I know that was a big concern for a lot of students. So unfortunately, obviously our kids can't drive and they can't observe driving with our certified instructor. However, they can complete the 30 hours of in-class instructional time that our students need or online. So ultimately what that means is that our students will be able to learn all the material online. And then when we do eventually get back into the school, our driver's ed teacher will strictly drive those students and they'll take their final exam. And then hopefully we have a whole slew of about 72 students that get a driver's license here soon. Deans are incentivizing engagement because ultimately that is a weakness in some ways. So we have a student of the week every week. We're sending out gift cards and students are really excited about that. As Linda has mentioned earlier, the CEB has been really, really helpful, and shouting out Ms. Smith, the librarian, is really important. She has come with her technology superpowers and lifted so many people off the ground and provided so many resources to them. And also just a ton of support to me as we're trying to get all of our teachers with different levels of Google Classroom experience off the ground. Mrs. Hitchens, the same thing. She has been operating her class through Google Classroom for some time as well and has been a huge support. We are excited to say as of today, we have officially contacted every single high school student at least one time. So there are no outstanding students that we can't find in the high school. Now it's just getting them engaged consistently. And then last but not least, last week we had four sophomores be accepted into the Delaware College Scholars Summer Program, which is definitely selective, and pending we're able to be back into our normal the normal swing of things here soon, they'll be able to travel around college campuses all summer, meet mentors, etc. So we're grateful for all the kids that applied and for Miss Russell's help specifically. for encouraging that. So on the other side, and someone sent a message. I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. I don't know. Okay. On the other side of it, though, there are, we are experiencing some challenges, like I've already been noted, with access and technology, Wi-Fi, et cetera. But I will say again, people are working really, really hard to get there. We did run into an issue with the recording situation for students that can't necessarily attend live classes, but were watching the video after the fact and then completing the work. So now that we have the screencast program, that's no longer an issue, which is great. Ultimately, our sophomores are much more engaged. I think it's because they see the light at the end of the high school tunnel a little bit more. So they're diving in. The classroom, the live sessions with sophomores are significantly larger. So we're really trying to get to the bottom of why freshmen are specifically very unengaged. Unfortunately, and to be transparent, it's not uncommon to have, you know, 2-3 kids in a freshman live class. So our teachers are working through that struggle. Our deans are really working on incentivizing, et cetera. I would say around that 70%, I think we're about 66% of students are actively participating. And then the other 33% are requiring a little bit more of a chase. But so for the next 30 days or so, we are working on improving our overall engagement plan. I'm working closely with our grade team leads, so Erica and Anthony and our deans, to work through a process where we're making constant contact with students who are difficult to reach, and parents that may just have more questions. The majority of our parents, we're finding, work essential jobs. So we are having a harder time making contact with some of our families because of that. And ultimately, as we're working through our problems, we're also keeping in mind that Teacher Appreciation Week is right around the corner, and we're planning to celebrate our teachers virtually. Any questions?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry. We can maybe talk more later if this isn't relevant right now, but to my knowledge, we have 2 special education students who have never been reached in the high school.
Okay, then we should definitely talk about that, and we can check that off. So make that 2. Cool. Okay, so if that's everything, thank you.
Is that Tia next?
Tia, you're up.
Hey everybody, I'm gonna share my screen.
Amanda, you have to stop sharing.
So for the middle school and this transition to distance learning, I think a lot of things we questioned. To have a quick turnaround to make sure our students were continuing learning. So one of the quotes I like is that the school building is closed, but school is still happening. So that's what we thought about in terms of how to keep school somewhat similar to what the students see. We had some key questions and big ideas about tech access and so the digital divide. We talked about giving out the Chromebooks, talking about teachers having to learn this new platform, students having to learn this new platform, how to sign on, how to check email, all of those things. And we also thought about synchronous versus asynchronous instruction. So all of our classes are recorded so that students are able to log back on and complete the work, but it has to be by that evening by 11:59 p.m. One of the key questions we grappled with as a leadership team and with Ms. Price was how do we create an environment that feels like school? So during research, we did the partnering with our school social media and our deans and make, so we have announcements every morning. We do shout outs to teachers, shout outs to fellows. And those were some of the ways that we get our students incorporated. I just met with Coach K today, and we're gonna talk about some challenges to actually get students moving and in their homes so that we can keep the students so they won't be so sedentary. Some of our benchmarks so far, we've had about approximately 60 students come to live classes. Tam and I pop into the classes to still do teacher observations, and there's upwards of 60 students in a class at a time. Our seventh graders are our concern with the lowest number of signing into Google Classroom. We have an effort with our deans to really support that, so along with our seventh grade leads and our seventh grade teachers. For assignment completion, everything is due Fridays by noon, and we usually get about 85% of the assignments, give or take 5%, but we definitely have students being more so engaged as time has went on. The highlights have been teachers are collaborating. We are creating this space to be patient and graceful because we are we're about 2 days ahead of the teachers, so we're learning this together, and I think it made us very honest with each other and very vulnerable. Students are becoming technology proficient, which will spread them, like, that's what they need in 2020. It's no longer a 21st century skill. It is a skill that's needed. Teachers are learning new methods to engage learning. So we talked about Nearpod, Screentastic, all these cool sites that are online for teachers to engage our students. And we have a student of the week, and they earn a $10 gift card for attendance and completion. And those gift cards are the things they can use now, like Amazon, DoorDash, and anything that does Seamless and Grubhub. Some of the challenges we embarked on were teacher learning curve with Google Classroom and catching everybody up in a week or two, blending tutorial with instruction systematically so that the fellows are supporting what's happening in the class after the live class is over, but tutorial has struggling with students showing up to tutorial because it's not counting as a grade. So we're figuring out how to make some points count as a grade. Students not coming to live classes. Again, we don't have 100% attendance, but we want them to feel their classmates and the questions that are asked in class as much as possible. We have some unreached students. I can't give you the accurate number today, but I can send it out. And the culture team and the grade team leads have been really helpful with engaging all these students. What we noticed, teachers do a survey every week, teachers and fellows, and one of the biggest parts of feedback is that our students don't know how to type. So we need somewhere trying to figure out a typing course that can happen in between here, and I'm doing some research for some ways we can incorporate that into the their task for weeks, for every week. For leadership support, what we do at the leadership team level, we do weekly teacher observations and feedback of live classes. We audit their lesson plans and feedback. We don't want this to be easy for students, and we understand challenges digitally, but we want this to engage students and not just basic questions. So we're pushing teachers to have classes that are rigorous but engaging. We have staff meetings every Friday to keep everything open with communication and feedback, and we have a survey to adjust for any needs that we need to fix as a school community. For collaboration, we talked about the weekly survey. We talk about in our staff meetings how to problem solve collectively if there is more than one to three people that have the issue. We do grade level breakout so that the teachers are talking to their fellows to talk about students and what students they have concerns with. And then we're thinking about ways to increase our family engagement with the CEB and also along with some gift cards to Walmart and other things. And I was on a webinar last week, and they told me they had a parent-teacher meeting virtually, and it was a very high attended. So thinking about some different ways to engage the parents in this digital platform that we might get more input and outreach. In terms of professional development, we've been referring teachers and also attending webinars for teachers and administrators focused on data-driven tools in a virtual learning environment is one thing to get the kids to show up, is another thing to get them to do the work, and then the third thing is what do we do with the work that they are producing and how does that make us change our instruction or increase our instruction. We're looking for resources and guidelines for virtual learning, and we're sharing best practices. Middle, high school, Eric has been a great help. Other teachers from different schools have definitely, everyone's kind of just helping out in great ways. We have content meetings where we're talking to our teachers, talking about what's happening in each content area, math, history, ELA, and science. And some of those are, some are led by me, some are led by Ms. Price, and some are led by science coaches like Ms. Sagan. As a leadership team, we've been very flexible and adaptable for teachers, especially that are experiencing anxiety or family loss because of COVID. We had some of our staff test positive, not our staff, but their family has tested positive, and we have one teacher that's still waiting test results. So we do personal check-ins. I have cards that I'm going to send out to every teacher to their home. And we Amanda said, planning for a virtual teacher appreciation week. So that is the middle school. Are there any questions?
All right, am I up?
Awesome, Atiya, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank all you guys. Yep, Jeff.
Nikki, can you put up the financial statement that we sent out, or do I have to do that?
I can do it. I think.
Is this it?
Did you? I got it. I'll get there.
Yeah. Okay, you got it. So I, yeah. I get up.
Yeah. Just gonna share
my screen.
Which one you want? Jeff, which pay sheet do you want?
Okay. All right, let's start there. Unfortunately, you have in the first column of this report, it says, if I can see it now, we need to move to the
you know, the board all has them, so okay. I think it might just be better.
I'll just talk off of mine then.
Okay.
I got to do this. There we go. Okay. So if you look on this, this is very hard to do, I would think, virtually. But if you look at the preliminary budget, that is in column D of the cash flow. Can everybody see that?
Hold on a second. Let's make sure that we can all open that same document.
Jeff, maybe just a high level overview.
Yeah. Well,
Linda, why don't you try projecting it on the screen just to make sure that we're all on the same page? Is this the current financial picture that was the?
This is the March report.
Oh, the March. Okay, so this is the web report.
Yes.
Yes, I will put up the web report.
Right. So, if you look in column D, we originally had a budget for the year that was roughly break even. And then in February, we proposed or approved a new budget that had a $293,000 deficit. If you go
Jeff, just give it 1 second until Linda gets this on the screen, just to make sure.
I'm getting there. Off. It's coming.
Okay, thank you, Linda.
All right.
Sorry to surprise you.
Now, then we want a cursor all the way out to the second to the last column, which gives the projection for the year, column Z.
Let's just use the web report. Will that work?
Okay, well, the web report's just going to list the revenue and the receipts that we have to date, and show the budget for the month. And basically, the month of March was really nothing special, and that there's almost all the revenue was in at this point, and almost all the expenses are at this point relatively recurring. So we are projecting, but then when we start to talk about the loss, you can see here we have $1.9 million in cash at this point. And while that sounds really good, you have to realize that we still have April, May, and June. And we'll have very little revenue that will actually come in April, May, and June. And monthly expenses are in the range of $700,000. So it's something that we're starting to get, it's getting kind of critical, because if at the last meeting, I took the loss and I increased it, the projected loss, I increased it from 293 to about 390. And March saw the same sort of thing, that with additional expenses, we're now tracking towards a loss of about $500,000 for the year. Questions?
I think we can go through some alternatives during executive session, but thank you for sharing this with us.
Okay. All right. So we'll need somebody to approve the web report.
I move to approve the web report.
I'll second.
Okay. All those approving, say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, approved. Thank you. Linda, did you have anything else for the non-executive session?
No.
Okay.
It's the last item on the agenda.
All right, so thank you. Does anybody have any questions before we complete this session and go to executive session? Okay, does everybody that is a board member have the content for the password access for the executive session?
Yeah.
When was that sent out? Was that?
Nikki sent it out.
Like today? Like, is it the no. one we, it's not the one we just used?
No.
Okay, I'll find it.
All right, so I'm going to end this meeting. I'll send it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I'm sure I'll find it.
Me.
Thank you.
Jim?
Yes.
Are we adjourned?
Yes, we're adjourned, and we're going to get into executive session. Thank you.
Jim, will you forward the executive session to me? Because I think my other...